people. This is Ronnie Monroe from Metal Church and the Ronnie Monroe Band, and you're listening to Turn On With Tina, Metal Horns.
Y'all ready for this?
She was beautiful. She was young. She was innocent. She was the greatest piece of ass I've ever had, and I've had them all over the world.
You're hot. Very hot.
Well, I've got news for you. You are mine now. You belong to me.
It's time for the coolest segment on the internet. Turned On with Tina Peake from Crusher Magazine.
Y'all ready for this?
Abso-fucking-lutely.
Welcome to another segment of Turned On with Tina. Tonight, my special guest is Daryl Dwarf Miller. And if the name sounds familiar, it should. Daryl is an internationally known musician, being the former drummer for the multi-million selling hard rock act Killer Dwarfs, as well as for the Nikki Sixx produced southern rock act Laidlaw. He shared concert stages with the likes of Iron Maiden, Motley Crue, ZZ Top, and Pantera, among others. Now with all that experience behind him, he has ventured into a new era of rock with his latest band called Automan, and has left behind his drum kit for frontman duties on the mic. On top of that, Automan has recently released their CD titled Pocket Change, which was produced by Daryl and co-produced by Greg Looper of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers fame. And the first single off that disc, titled Back in the Sun, is what I'll be playing after our interview. Pocket Change has a grand total of only 8 tracks and range from straight-ahead rock and roll to a mix of blues-based rock. And as Daryl pointed out, it's all killer and no filler. And he's telling the truth, folks, this album is awesome. Don't forget to stay tuned after our interview to hear a track off Ottoman's new disc, the song titled Back in the Sun. So without babbling any further, here is my interview with the very charming and very talented Daryl Dwarf Miller.
So I wanted to start off by taking you back a bit. I was checking out your time capsule site, and there was a section titled Steppenwolf. For those listeners that have been living under a rock, Steppenwolf were a Canadian rock band that helped establish heavy metal music in the late 1960s. Born to be Wild is probably the song most recognized as that of the Steppenwolf era. So I wondered if you would share that story with our listeners, because I loved reading about it, and ironically, that was also the first rock concert that you ever attended, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, thanks for asking me that, Tina, because I don't get into that a whole lot in a lot of interviews, and I'd love to talk about it. I grew up in a very musical family. My dad's a very accomplished jazz piano player, and I grew up around that. And then his sister, her sons are the two brothers of Steppenwolf that were the stars of the band. Basically, the drummer was Jerry McCrohan, which aka Jerry Edmonton, which is my first cousins, and Dennis McCrohan is Mars Bonfire, who's the writer. Ended up being an outside writer for Steppenwolf. He was a guitar player in the band when they first started, when they were Jack Lennon and the Sparrow, before Steppenwolf was named Steppenwolf. And they moved to New York in the 60s, and then they moved from there to San Francisco, and they really became an American band, but you're right, they are a Canadian band. And, you know, I got really close with Jerry, the drummer, over the years, and in fact, when Killer Dwarfs were recording Dirty Weapons in L.A. in 89, Jerry had come to several barbecues with us, and got to know the band real well, and really took an interest in Killer Dwarfs, and he was just very supportive with me, and it really made a big difference in my whole outlook on rock and roll, I think. And he actually gave me a gift one day. He came down, he lived in San Diego, California, north, like Santa Barbara area, and he drove down, and he brought me this snare drum one day, no drum heads on it, just a snare drum with the rims just, you know, tightened down. And he said that, from what I remember, you know, there's always beverages involved and whatnot. I think this was the snare drum that he tracked Born to be Wild with. It was his original snare from the 60s, and he gave it to me as a gift, and I have it. I restored it, and I have it. So that's my prized kind of possession. And unfortunately, not to put it down on the whole story, but Jerry got killed in a car accident on Thanksgiving in 1993, and that was tough for me, but, you know, I don't know, it's how things roll, and, so that's sort of it, and Dennis is still alive, lives in, Arizona. I don't really talk to him a whole lot. So that's my connection with Steppenwolf.
Yeah, it was just really interesting. I mean, I didn't realize that. I knew some of your work with the Killer Dwarfs, of course, but didn't know that there was a connection with Steppenwolf. I just thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, cool. A lot of people don't, and that's sort of why when I started the Time Capsule at my personal website, that I thought that was a neat touch, and I should share a lot of that.
Yeah.
Private before that, so now it's public knowledge. I've had Daryl Miller's Time Capsule up for, 8 years now.
Really? Yeah, it was cool. I enjoyed seeing that.
Right.
Okay, well, you worked with Nikki Sixx during your time with Southern Rockers Laidlaw,
right.
And after working in the studio with Nikki to record First Big Picnic, you had this to say: out of all the recordings I have achieved, the drum sounds on the Laidlaw disc are closest to what I hear when I play. Tell me about that time and why you felt that way.
Well, I think for me, I mean, just stepping back to Killer Dwarfs and then going from Killer Dwarfs to Laidlaw, which was a big transition, you know, two different, complete different bands. And, you know, the Dwarfs worked with Andy Johns, who's one of the heaviest rock producers ever, you know, who worked with, you know, the Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin and Rod Stewart. And so no taking away from anything production-wise that Andy or even the Killer Dwarfs records. But from a drummer standpoint, you know, what I meant by that is, like, in my ears, when I sit down on a drum kit and hit the drums, nobody is closer to those drums than me. I'm a foot away from the tones of the drums. You understand?
Right.
The tom sounds. I'm literally a foot and a half away when I hit that drum. It's like, bam, it's in my head. And, you know, I think we just approached the drum sounds on that First Big Picnic record as keeping it very underproduced, you know, kind of raw in a sense, and just real solid, which is traditional kind of drum sounds of the 60s, 70s, like Lynyrd Skynyrd, bands like that. I mean, that's what Laidlaw was about. So I just loved, you know, and then, like, with Nikki producing, obviously, you know, he had the knowledge of working with Tommy Lee with all those years and just producing, co-producing and being a part of production of all Motley Crue's records. I think he still got the slamming, you know, the slamming drums, the big drums, but got the best of both worlds, got the, you know, the underproduced drum sound, but with the tone, and that's what I meant by that. And I just love the sounds on that disc. And then jumping right ahead, which we'll talk about in a minute, obviously, is my new band, Auto Man. I produced that record and had Greg Looper co-produce from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and I went after the same type of drum sounds on the Auto Man record and got the same things, although I didn't drum on that record. I produced Adrian, my drummer, Adrian Cavan, drummed on the Auto Man record, so it was very cool. I used a lot of the same techniques to track the Auto Man record.
Well, I am going to get to that, but I just wanted to give some of our listeners a bit of background on you. So I don't want you thinking that we're not going to be talking about the new band. We are. I am getting to that.
No problem.
Okay. The Killer Dwarfs were formed by Russ Graham and yourself back in the early 80s and received some well-deserved critical acclaim. But then the band disbanded and reunited again in 2001. What is the status of the Killer Dwarfs now? Is it done?
You know, it's interesting. Russ and I are still really good friends, and we actually keep in touch quite regularly.
Right.
Even though we're in other projects. But, you know, when we got back together, I was in Laidlaw for 7 years. Then I come back to Toronto, and I'd kind of ran my course with the two Laidlaw records I recorded. And when we put Killer Dwarfs back together, it wasn't really, how do I say it? It wasn't like a money-driven thing. It wasn't like a Spinal Tap moment, like, it seems we have a number one hit in Japan, let's get back together. You know, wasn't really like that.
Right.
It wasn't a manager saying, listen, will you guys get back together because I can offer you $200,000 if you'll do it in tour. That's not how it was. It was all motivated by fans only.
Right.
Fans, it was enough fans hitting KillerDwarfs.com website to get us back in a room together. and decided to do it. And now in hindsight, I look back at that, and I think we got back together too soon, because now would have been a better time for the Killer and Horse to be back together, because it seemed like not a lot of people realized we were back together in 2001. We went into it, we did a North American tour, we did some dates with Queensryche and few bands and toured North America, but we didn't record a new record. So this is going to answer your question. I don't think you're going to see the Killer and Horse tour again with the original lineup that we were out with in 2001. But one thing I have learned is to never say never. Because I've been bit in the ass a few times doing that.
Yeah.
So as it stands right now, you're not going to see a Killer and Horse tour with the original lineup.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious why the band didn't try to regroup and put out another album. I guess that was kind of what I was getting at, too.
And I was trying to answer that.
Yeah.
I knew you were going there. The thing was, we did a live album, which is a DVD. We did a live CD, DVD. We did it at the Docks in Toronto, which is called the Sound Academy now. And that's out. And then we were looking at going further. I think we wrote some songs. We were in rehearsals and whatnot. And I don't know. It just was same thing, same thing, different day, I guess you could say. I was going to swear, but I'm trying not to.
Oh, you can swear. It's internet radio.
I know. I'll tell you what, Tina, I don't like to get into a groove of swearing, because when I go to do FM radio...
you forget yourself.
I'm like, yeah, so fuck. I'm like...
yeah, but that's
I try not to do that.
But that's why they have that delay in there.
I just want to answer your question. I know I'm going on too long here. We didn't...
Okay.
It just didn't feel right writing a new record at that time. We did kind of make a small, cheap attempt at it.
Okay.
There's internal things within the band that just... I don't know. It just wasn't meant to be, I don't think. And I just... I don't know, man. I don't want to ever say never, but there's no way there's any plans for Mike, Ron, Russ, and I to tour again in the near future. I don't see it. And I'm definitely completely swamped and dedicated to Auto Man, my new band. So.
Right.
And Russ is in some new things, too. So there you go.
Okay. So what would you say are the differences between your new band and the Killer Dwarfs, music or otherwise?
Killer Dwarfs was... a hard rock heavy metal band, I guess, with the coin name heavy metal, which my cousin Dennis actually came up with, which is pretty funny. heavy metal thunder, the word heavy metal is in Born to Be Wild, the song. He actually coined that term.
Really?
Dennis did. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Mars Bonfire, the lyrics in Born to Be Wild, heavy metal thunder, he coined the damn term, heavy metal.
Really?
Anyway, Dwarfs were a different, we were a part of the movement, we were a part of the 80s. Some of our videos were the very first videos ever seen on television, on MTV, and much music in Canada. So, definitely a different thing. And Auto Man would be closer to Laidlaw, actually, or not intentionally, though. I mean, what Auto Man was about is I grew up in the 70s. I don't make any bones that I'm in my 40s now. Like, I've been touring for 30 years or, since I was a little kid. My first band, I was 9 years old. Anyway, we Carlton Lockhart, my writing partner, and I, we come from the same school of rock, which is pretty well 70s rock bands. Like, my heroes are Aerosmith, AC/DC, Zeppelin, Johnny Winter, Ted Nugent, Kiss, on and on and on. 70s rock music is, that's what I grew up with. So I wanted to write a rock record of my own with my writing partner, Carl, and then put it on and get that same joy or rush or whatever you want to call it that an Aerosmith Toys in the Attic used to get for me, when I was growing up in high school and whatnot. And that's what I went after with this. I wanted to write a blues-rooted rock and roll record, and I think I've done it.
Right on. You told me a couple of weeks ago that some of your friends are blown away by the fact that you're a mofo lead singer in Ottoman, but in fact, you did sing some lead vocals in Sphinx back in the 70s, which was your first band while you were still in high school. So what made you decide to get behind the mic and sing lead vocals again?
Well, it's funny because when Russ and I had met for the first time in Quebec City when we formed Killer Dwarfs, he was in another band called Oz, and I was in the podcast you had mentioned. You know what, Tina? I'm impressed with you've done your work. I'm impressed with you. You know, the questions you're asking me, you've done some research at least. So I commend you for that.
Well, thank you.
Anyways, I was in the band Sphinx, and I was a drummer-singer, much like Don Henley or whatever you want to call it, Phil Collins, whatever. I was singing and drumming from the kit, and I was singing 18 songs a night. We would do 3, 4, 45-minute sets a night, that band. It was like a cover band, right? So I got to cut my teeth as a singer and a drummer, and when I met Russ, you know, I was breaking up Sphinx, and he was finished with his Alice Cooper tribute band he was in or whatever, and I had mentioned to him that I wanted to be a frontman, that I wanted to pursue it. I toured for 5 years with Sphinx as a drummer, singer, and I wanted to do one or the other. I knew that. And, of course, Russ said, oh, well, stay on the drums. And, you know, it's kind of good that he did, because there would be no Killer Dwarves if we hadn't have made that decision.
Right.
But now it's gone full circle. And now I'm getting to live out another dream of mine, which was to be a frontman. And I will lead up to how it really all happened. I was on tour with Laidlaw, opening for ZZ Top. I did about 46 cities in the United States with them. And I used to get up at 5 o'clock every night and do the sound check with ZZ Top's crew. And I would sing Shot Down in Flames by AC/DC in the sound check every night. So I got into this role of getting up in these hockey arenas, no people there yet, empty house, you know, busting out AC/DC with Billy Gibbons, Tech, Elwood, and his road crew.
Yeah.
And it was a blast, and I don't know, the light just went on right there, and I just went, you know, I could do this. I could see myself being a front man. I could do this. So when I moved back to Toronto, it all unfolded when I met Carlton from Auto Man, and the rest is history. Voila, 5, 6 years later, here we have the Pocket Change record out.
Right. So who are the other members, and how were they brought into the fold?
Okay, Carlton Lockhart is a guitar player extraordinaire, very talented, very finesse player. You have to see him to kind of believe him. He plays left-handed, and he plays upside down the guitar, and he plays with no pick, very Mark Knopfler, Jeff Beck, these kind of finesse players. You can go on YouTube and see him. There's a couple of new vids of us live up there. And John Fenton, a bass player, used to be in a death metal band called Soulless, believe it or not, years ago. He's just a really long, good friend of mine, longtime friend, and it just made sense that he should be in this band with me, and he's a great singer, too, so I wanted a lot of backing vocals in Auto Man, and he delivers that. And Adrian Cavan is my drummer. He's the guy that I ended up choosing to sit behind me. And he's doing a damn fine job, that boy. And so that's my lineup.
Was it weird for you, though, to have somebody else play drums as opposed to you drumming and singing a la Phil Collin? I mean, how odd is that for you, or is it?
It's not.
Really?
Because I feel like I'm still a part of it.
Right.
It's so strange. I still feel like he, you know, Adrian's a perfect drummer for Auto Man, just the drummer that I would be, you know what I mean? Kind of, that's how I would play drums in this band, basically, and he's delivering the same rooted style of drumming, and I swear to God, I almost feel an entity of the playing on stage. I mean, I even motion out some of the fills and stuff, so I feel very connected with the drums still, and we actually have a double drum kit that we built, and I do get up and play one song a night for those fans. I just can't let go of seeing Duncan Doohickey drum. I get up for one song a night. We do a double drum thing. It's very entertaining.
I'm
getting off on it. We're about 5 shows in on our tour, by the way.
Right. Well, I'm going to get to that, too. So Pocket Change is the title of your new disc. Tell me about the writing for the album. Who wrote most of the music and the lyrics?
Well, Carlton and I, we are the sole writers of Auto Man. We try to approach it 50-50. We basically write half and half, but that's not always how things work out. So sometimes some songs are more Carlton, like maybe lyrically it's more his song. Some are more mine. That's a personal thing between us, but it really is pretty well 50-50. At the end of the day, we co-write everything together. But like I said, some of the tunes are more Carlton, some are more me. But we have a very happy writing relationship. It's just almost too easy. sometimes. Oh, it makes me nervous.
Really?
How easy some of this stuff comes together.
Wow, so, incredible.
See, you know, we got another album we're going to have to write in a year or so, so I'm already kind of thinking that, even though this album just came out, but it's good to keep on it, you know.
Yeah, no kidding. I know it's hard, but do you have a favorite song off Pocket Change, and if so, which one and why?
I love them all on this one. There's only 8 tracks on it, by the way. It's like 4 a side.
Right.
Side 1 and side 2. Very, I'm a vinyl enthusiast, even though it's on a CD. It's like, I'm not sure if a lot of people realize, like, those Boston records and those 70s records, they only had, like, 2-4 songs a side on a lot of them. Now there's, like, 18 songs on people's discs, but, you know, those classic records really had maybe 4 or 5 songs per side, but they were all great. So that's sort of what I went after with Pocket Change. Like, didn't even bother recording some of the songs that were maybe a little filler type, that, you know, possibly could have been filler type tunes. So you really do get 8 really, really solid tracks on this Pocket Change record.
Yeah, I've listened to it. It's pretty awesome. I like it.
Thank you.
Yeah, your voice is good.
Oh, a vocal bonus. Thank you. Well, I worked hard on it, and like I said, it's not like I'm a stranger to singing. I mean,
no.
I've been singing my whole life. I mean, I sang backing vocals on all the records I've ever recorded as well, so.
Of course.
You know, you just don't become a singer one day. You either have it or you don't. There's no doubt about that.
Right, I believe that. So you didn't say, you don't have a favorite? You don't have a favorite?
Oh, I got sidetracked.
Yes,
sorry,
you did.
I don't have a favorite because that's what it's just, I don't know, it's hard for me to pick out of those 8.
Okay.
It's like having 8 kids and you say, I like 3 of my kids but hate 5 of them. But I'll gravitate towards my favorites. How's that? I really like the Mill Dog Blues because that song, anybody can write a blues song. It's just the shuffle. It's so easy to write a blues song. But to write a rock blues song in this day and age that actually kicks some shit, it's not the easiest thing to do. And, you know, without sounding like, what's this? And I think the Mill Dog Blues got a lot of heart and a little bit of light comedy to it even. It's just, I really like that track. And then the obvious, you know, Cinnamon Rain, Back in the Sun, Digging Deep, 3 power, you know, quality hooky songs they are.
Right.
So, but again, I'm having a hard time choosing. So I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, well then tell me about Back in the Sun, because I'll be playing that after our interview.
Okay, great. Back in the Sun was lyrically, I wrote that song, and you know, back in the 90s, mid-90s, when I was finished with Killer Dwarfs and moving to Los Angeles to join Laidlaw, that was a kind of a dark time in my life. You know, most of my rock career has been very, very up and positive, but, you know, when that Kurt Cobain thing happened and all the metal bands disappeared, including Killer Dwarfs, and we had lost our job, basically, you know, we were no longer with Epic Records. They had not picked up the option, and, you know, I was out of work, basically, for the first time in my rock career. The first time I'd been, you know, and it was a weird place to be. I mean, I had finances, I was okay there, but I wasn't making any more money. And I was looking at my bank account, and I basically was sitting around in Toronto for a year, wondering, what am I doing here? Or where am I going to go? Where am I going to go with this? Where am I going to go next? I'm this black-haired, long-haired, heavy metal guy that's, like, discarded by the business.
Yeah.
It's a reality, though. Like, mm-hmm. It's a reality when it hits you. And that's what I wrote it about. I wrote that about the great feeling of leaving Toronto and moving to Los Angeles, and I was literally back in the sun again, and Laidlaw was, I really loved that band, and you know, I had a lot of great opportunities and got right back up again, right back into playing all the hockey arenas again, and went right from the gutter almost right back up again with those guys. And there's a couple of personal things in there, in those lyrics, that only I would understand, so I'll leave it at that. But yeah, that's, the balls of that song was written about that time in my life, transition, moving from Toronto to LA.
The band performed a benefit gig in Toronto on April 30th at the Tattoo Rock Parlor, which I love that venue, for the Princess Margaret Hospital, the Ride to Conquer Cancer concert, where you also raffled off a guitar that was signed by some pretty big names in the Canadian music community. How did you get involved in that charity? What was the turnout like?
Oh, it was- was a great show. It was a success. I was so happy. It turned out to be a great success. And for Tattoo is a very nice venue to play. Not too big, not too small. I think it holds about 400 people. Great sight lines to see a band, great lighting, PA. I loved the venue. It was the first time I'd ever played there. We were actually approached by Team Hammerhead that put that on. It's kind of an interesting story. Where we rehearse, one of the promoters from Team Hammerhead was walking by a rehearsal place one night and listening to us through the door, the word of a lie. And when we were finished rehearsing, Lori Rossi, she came up to me and introduced herself and said, you know, we're putting on some events, for Princess Margaret Hospital. We do it every year, and we'd love to put on a concert, and we're looking for a band. And she goes, I don't even know who you are, but I just think you sound phenomenal, and I thought I'd approach you on it. And that's really how we got involved with them. And then they found out I was Daryl Dwarf from the Killer Dwarfs and blah, blah, blah. But that didn't really mean, that didn't matter, you know. I mean, Auto Man's a brand new band, and they went out on a limb, actually, and everything turned out to be, you know, a success and very positive. So that's how it happened. We raised some pretty good money. I haven't got the figures yet because it's so new. We just played this show three days ago, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
3 days ago. And the guitar, which was funny, a guy from Ottawa won it, and it was funny. It was the father of the comedian that opened for us.
Yeah,
a comedian opened for the band who donated his time. He drove all the way down from Ottawa with his dad, and his dad bought arm lengths of tickets. We were selling how the raffle was. You could buy an arm length of tickets for $10, or five for five, or for one, or dollar, or something like that. I can't remember, but it was like that. And then it went into a hat, and we picked it, and the guy's father won it. It was great.
He was so stoked.
Yeah, we had Lips and Rob from Anvil signed it. We had Stomp and Tom Connors, Luke Shen from the Leafs. We had almost the whole Bare Naked Ladies band, on and on. It was a lot of pretty big stars. Roberts from CNN was in town. J.D. Roberts, John Roberts, he signed it.
Yeah, and I saw Finger 11, I think, signed it.
Yeah, two guys from Finger 11, a singer and a guitar player.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. It's a worldly piece, and it was a nice, it was a Fender Squire, it was like a copy of a Fender Strat, but it was a Fender Squire candy apple, nice color, with a case and everything, you know.
Wow.
Pretty good value, and congratulations to Patty Mac's dad, the comedian. But yeah, we had a good time, and there's actually, I posted one song of that show is on YouTube now. You can find it.
Oh, okay, I'll have to look for that later.
Yeah, because it's literally just went up today.
Right on.
One song, Mill Dog Blues is actually up there, one song.
Okay. Ottoman is also playing Woodstock Canada Festival this August. It's being held in Toronto at Downsview Park. It's going to be a four-day event with some amazing bands set to play. Tell me more about that, how you were approached, and what day and time do you guys hit the stage?
Okay, well, I don't know a whole lot about it, Dina, at this point. I know it was moved to Downsview Park, which is cool. I'm really happy about that because it's right in our backyard now in Toronto. I think this show is something to do with the Cancer Society, too, actually. They are going to be donating some money to that. And I was approached by the promoter right on MySpace is how I was originally approached. So I really wasn't even going to answer the email on MySpace. And I got a phone call from a couple of people telling me this promoter, PJ, is trying to phone you. So the promoter actually phoned me and got a hold of my agent, and it was all for real. Because when it first started out, I didn't know what it was about, you know what I mean? I didn't take it serious. So it turned out to be, you know, they're doing a serious show here, and it's an indie showcase from what I see.
Yeah.
I thought there may be bigger name acts, but there's not. It's really a Canadian indie showcase.
Right.
We're playing on August 1st with good friends of mine, Svengali, a band from the 80s. Remember them?
I was just going to say, I know those guys.
Yeah, they're on before we are. They're on, we're on at the end of the night on August 1st. There's the four that day. There's, I don't know, 15 bands that day starting at noon. But around 7 o'clock at night, it's Svengali, Automan, Fist, an old band from Ottawa from years ago, from the 70s, and Freeze Gang, band that had the Brighton Rock drummer. That's his band, the band Brighton Rock.
Yeah.
That's the last four bands on August 1st. That's my day that I'm there.
All right. So where can people find you and the band? Can you give us your MySpace and website links?
Yes, I will. Let's start with MySpace. It's MySpace/AutomanCA, which is Automan Canada. I'll explain that in a minute. You can go to our home website, which is www.automan.ca. Or you can find us on Facebook. There's a Facebook group. If you just typed in automan.ca on a search, you'll find the group. There's a fan club Facebook group. And I think that's all you need. And as far as buying the disc, the disc is now out as of March 17th. Lucky the Irish, don't you know? St. Paddy's Day. And I have a deal with Sony BMG, which I'm very excited about. So it's via Megaforce in New York City. So the record's distributed worldwide. You can find it in Canada at HMV stores or iTunes, of course, Amazon.com, all those. And in America, you can go to Best Buy and pick it up there. And then iTunes, Amazon, the rest of them, and a whole slew of mom-and-pop stores in America has it racked. And in Europe, same thing. Amazon is really probably the best for China, Japan, England, all of it. But you'll find it. Just, you know, with the internet today, you can just do a search on automan.ca pocket change. And I wanted to explain quickly the .ca. There's the band's called, you can call us Automan, but you'll always see automan.ca and all our promo and records and everything, because there's a TV show out of the United States from the 80s called Automan, and I didn't want to get it confused on searches and stuff, and they pretty well own that, so I own Automan Canada, so that's us.
Awesome.
Okay. Yeah.
So is there anything else you want to talk about or anything you'd like to add that I didn't ask you today, Daryl?
Just that the touring part for me is very important right now, so that's really, I've done everything I can, you know, and now as far as getting the record recorded and getting it out and landing the proper distribution on it, it's really all about touring, so I want to do 200 shows this year, and that I made that very, you know, a strict comment to my agent and management, and I just said, you know, I want to play 200 shows, I just picked the number in North America, so you can pretty well be sure you're going to see us in your market soon, so we're like five shows in, 195 to go, now I look at it. So that's all I'm doing right now, is spending all my time on getting us on tours and getting us out there, so I just look forward to seeing everybody, and I'd like to thank all the Dwarf fans, Laidlaw, whoever that's stuck with me here and is coming out and really showing me some love here with this new band. Everybody's really enjoying it, and I thank you for that, for sticking with me.
So thanks so much for your time. It was great chatting with you. I'll definitely be at the Woodstock Festival, so hopefully we can meet up and say hi if you're not too busy.
Of course we will. And I'm having a beer with you if you still drink. I do.
Yeah, well, clearly.
Yes.
After celebrating your birthday for 3 days, I would think that there would be some drinking involved.
Yes, yes, I have been celebrating a birthday. I'm 29 all over again.
Oh, yeah, 29 and holding, that's what I say.
Yeah, that's right. I'm almost 30, folks.
Yeah.
I'm looking good. I really appreciate your time and for promoting Automan. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
And I can't wait to meet you.
I can't wait to meet you, too.
Okay, girl.
All right, you take care.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Master of disaster. When time for this. Sometimes I think I was wrong.